Okay. Are you guys telling me that there's an alien spaceship? That cloud right there.
It doesn't move like a ship.
What do you mean, OJ?
What if it's not a ship?
Up.
Let's go.
Saddle up. Let's go. Let's do this.
Saddle up. Perfect, Tony.
Yeah.
Did you do that on purpose?
I did it on purpose. I'm ahead of the curve here on the puns and the punning and the joking.
You've come out on fire already.
Damn, it's good to see you.
You too, man.
You missed doing the show.
I definitely missed you, and we've missed you. This is Rated P for Paranormal Season 7. Episode 1. I'm Maddie Blake. That's Tony Arkin in Brooklyn. We are two full-time showbiz pros who rate and review film and television, but not just any film and TV, paranormal-themed film and TV, basically from UFOs to cryptids to ghosts. If it has to do with the unexplained and someone filmed it, we'll cover it. And we give it a rated P for paranormal, meaning it goes on our shelf and you got to watch it, or a P for pass, as in no thanks. And speaking of saying no, Tony, we'll be tackling Nope tonight, which is the subject of our review. Plus, I phoned home to E.T.'s Earth Mama and got her thoughts on horror in general, and she drops a bombshell about Cujo and our top three list inspired by tonight's film, guaranteed to blow your mind, or perhaps in this case, protect your mind. But first, hello, Tony.
Hello, Maddie.
Ah, yes, back in Matty Road Studios, where I belong with you. We haven't been able to do it for some 2 months or something, but we're back.
It's been a long break, but you had important things to do and things that we can't talk about now, but we'll be able to talk about soon, I guess, I hope.
Well, actually, as we record this, you always say that in podcasting, as we record this, the first episode of my Beyond Oak Island Adventures aired on the History Channel last night. If you're just joining us because of Nope, sometimes we get, when we do a big movie like this, we get new listeners because they just want to check out, oh, I like Nope. I want to see what they had to say about it. Or I hated Nope and I want to see what they had to say about it. I host a couple shows on the History Channel in conjunction with The Curse of Oak Island. And one of them is Beyond Oak Island. And I go on these adventures and we film all summer. So this show suffers because I'm on the road.
Yeah.
And they're all in the can now. And now they just start airing this winter. So the first one aired last night. I was in Key West, Florida, and we were with the Fishers. Mel Fisher is a really famous treasure hunter, and his grandson is now continuing. They found a wreck called the Atocha about 40 miles off the coast of Key West, and they're out there searching. There's still billions of dollars worth of treasure on the ocean floor from that wreck, and they just keep pulling stuff up, and we found an incredible artifact from the wreck, an olive jar, which is incredible when you think about the diver who grabbed that and handed it to me. I'm the second person to have touched that, probably besides the deckhand, the night it went down in the storm. 400 years ago. It's pretty powerful history to be a part of.
Wow. And,
yeah, I'm real proud of it. It's
is that fun. The only story you can tell?
No, we can. I could tease upcoming episodes, but really, no one wants to hear that.
All right. I'll call you later.
And I've been binging, actually, on your other podcast you do with your brother, the Arkin Brothers Talk About Movies, which I think is a delight. And I consider it, I'm going to call it a brother podcast, not a sister podcast, because you guys are brothers. So it's more apropos, but I consider it our brother podcast and I love it. And I'm a fan of you guys. So,
well, thank you, man. We have fun doing that. It's a different kind of vibe on that show, different kind of research that goes into this,
mm-hmm.
different relationships.
Yeah. Right. Like we're brothers from another mother, but it's like metaphoric. You guys are actually literally brothers.
Yeah. I'm hard pressed to tell who treats each other worse, which set of, like, do you and I treat each other worse than Matthew and I treat each other?
No, I feel like you guys, it's safer for you guys to really just, because you know your brothers. You and I, we could fracture in a second. Someone says the wrong thing.
It's true. It's pretty. It's dangerous. This podcast is dangerous. Arkin Brothers is like a nice, you know, like a worn pair of jeans. It's like very comfy, like worn in, you know, a worn in leather jacket. This is like, you know, you could get electric shocks from this relationship.
feel like your brother enjoys almost like, I love when you get upset about things when it comes to films. Mm-hmm. I feel like your brother likes when you know stuff he doesn't about films, mm-hmm. and he kind of revels in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You like me to be upset. You like me a little upset.
Yeah, I do. That's my favorite Tony.
Awesome.
So before we get into Nope and the Dee Wallace bonus interview, basically E.T.'s mom, which I teased just a second ago, I wanted to get a sense of just what you've been watching in the interim. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind? Let's do a quick junk drawer. This is stuff we never get to. And since we haven't done a show in 2 months, there's a lot of stuff in the junk drawer.
Now it's time for the stuff we didn't get to.
What a piece of junk.
P4P junk drawer.
Let's see. Anything that I liked? No, I haven't seen anything that was any good at all. And it's been just trash. I've been really bored.
That's so perfect. After all that research, checking your list, you don't see anything worth talking about. That's so awesome. Let's see. Well, my list is really similar, actually. I've not been impressed by anything, although I did find a little indie horror on Shudder, The Dark and the Wicked. I don't know if you've seen that.
No. It sounds got my name on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool little small indie, you know, smallish. Maren Ireland is the star of it, who's really good in it. She's good in everything she does, basically.
Is that the one about the sisters or something coming back to the house, the farmhouse?
It's a sister and a brother. They go back to a small farmhouse.
Yeah, I saw it. It's spooky.
It's spooky. It's really well done.
Yeah.
That was kind of a surprise. But I do a daily radio show, like a commercial radio show, called Heather and Maddie with the great Heather Gerson, my radio partner. And, you know, that's kind of a much different thing than what we do here, what I do elsewhere. It's kind of a music show, top 40 soccer mom audience type of thing. And we, as part of that job, I had to go see Hocus Pocus 2.
Oh, premiere, yeah. Oh,
which,
man,
was angering in so many ways.
We didn't. I think you told me you were going to do that. You texted me that you were going to do that or something. And I actually felt kind of bad for you, like for legit.
Yeah. No, my soul, like I felt so dirty. I had to leave the theater 3 times. Heather was dying laughing. Like they broke into song at several points. And Catherine and Jimmy, I have no, you know, I don't want to pile on or any, but Catherine and Jimmy does this thing as that character where she goes like this.
Yeah,
and I'm making a face.
Maddie's making a face. He's kind of like a Popeye face, a little bit, like jaw going one way, big eye going the other way. Yeah.
So imagine watching that for 2 hours, dialogue. Like,
Kind of a grimace, like a pirate face.
Oh, my God. And then they took the Blondie classic song, One Way or Another, and did a sing on dance along. I can't even talk about it. Why am I talking about it? I'd rather talk about the devil terrorizing that farmhouse.
That singing and dancing part sounds like it's your kind of movie, though. You've been enjoying the musicals lately.
I have been going to live musicals as part of that job as well. The beautiful people.
Oh, really? And coming in from out of town, or are you going to this like the big city to see this?
I'm going into Providence, baby.
You go to Providence to see the musicals, mm-hmm. okay, that are coming in from this New York City or not?
Like the traveling show. Yeah, right. The traveling Broadway teams. Who are, by the way, I saw the Tina Turner biography play.
Yes.
I think it's called Tina.
Yeah, I think you've actually talked about this on the show already.
Oh, the girl who played Tina. Wow, yeah. Incredible. Yeah. And then I saw Don't Worry, Darling, the movie.
The new movie, Olivia Wilde's movie.
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about that. I want to see that.
You know, it's not that bad. I think it suffers a little bit from, and this is no knock on him because he's a good actor, Harry Styles, the singer. But I just feel like in that role is so central to what's going on, no spoiler alerts, that you really need an actor who's got the gravitas to pull that off. And I think it suffers there. But I mean, it's a good effort. It's well made.
Sometimes, Maddie, acting is a job for actors.
Hmm.
Sometimes it's true.
Stop being such a pussy.
Callbacks.
I don't even need drops. I just do my own drops. Well, let's
you
get
are
to
a drop at this point.
I'm a human drop. I am a human drop. Oh, I've missed you. And we've missed you, P4Pers. Let's get to this interview, a bonus interview, if you will. that comes from the aforementioned radio show I do. I have a wonderful radio partner. She's one of the most talented people I've ever worked with in any capacity. It just so happens that her expertise is radio. And she was working in New York City, drive time morning radio from the time she was like in her young 20s. She's been a news person. She's just got all the chops. She runs our board. She's a tour de force. Her name's Heather Gersten. So the show is called Heather and Maddie. It's a local morning radio show. And we just have fun. And every once in a while, we get an interview that we want to say yes to because it means something to us. And Dee Wallace has a new film out called The Knicks. She was promoting that. So Heather and I were able to interview her. You and I have covered a couple of her movies. And we've been very clear about what we feel about Dee Wallace. So in a sense, even though I was doing the interview with Heather, you were very much on my mind. But I asked you, what would you ask Dee Wallace, Tony, so I can put it on my list of questions? And Heather, coincidentally, asked pretty much what you wanted to ask, and it's about the horror genre in general.
Nice.
But I want to play a couple clips because she's such a legend. So this clip is me basically introducing myself to Dee, and I bring you up, and, a movie that we covered here on Rated P for Paranormal comes up, The Frighteners. Here we go.
First of all, we share the same birthday, December 14th.
Oh, sad. I love you already.
You know, I do a film review podcast as well, where we analyze and rate paranormal-themed movies. I do it with Tony Arkin. And you have come up... Yeah, we've reviewed three of your movies, and one of them was The Frighteners. And I said, with no irony at all, you should have been nominated for an Academy Award for your performance in that movie, The Frighteners. You are so awesome.
Oh, aren't you sweet.
And you still got it.
It's such an underrated film. You know what happened? It was supposed to come out at this time of the year, like around Halloween, which would have been perfect. But there was another movie that hadn't been finished, and so in their infinite wisdom, the studio released it in the middle of summer with all the big blockbusters, and it kind of got lost.
Mm.
And I think they should re-release it. I think we should start a petition around where they re-release it at Halloween.
So isn't that a cool little factoid?
That's great. Oh, she's fantastic. I'm so jealous you got to talk to her.
I know. Did you hear her say she loves me already?
Yeah, I did.
I love you already.
A little bit jealous about that. That's awesome. I think I've actually been a fan of hers longer than you've been alive.
I love you already.
She didn't. It's funny. I didn't hear her say I love Tony Arkin when I said I did it with Tony Arkin. She went,
oh. I heard an edit. Was there? It seemed like there was an edit point.
There was an edit there.
Yeah.
There was an edit there because she went, ooh. And I had to replace it with a, oh.
That sounds like okay. It was a kind of a sexy, oh, though. Maybe it was more like that.
More like when I saw Hocus Pocus 3, that kind of sound.
Uh-huh. I love you already.
Here's Dee being asked by my partner, Heather Gersten, the great Heather Gersten, what she watches. Your question, I believe you're going to ask Dee, one of them was the horror genre something that she picked on purpose? What does she think about the horror genre? And Heather kind of broached that subject, and this is really interesting.
You sit down and watch a movie on a Friday night. Are you watching rom-coms? Are you watching Hallmark movies? Or are you like sticking with the horror genre?
No, I don't do horror a lot. I mean, I do it a lot, but I don't watch it that much in my personal time. Although, if you Google positive effects of watching horror movies, you will be very surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's great for your nervous system. It's great for your brain. It helps you assimilate fear, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, what I usually love to watch are relationship films.
So the more horror movies you watch, the smarter you're supposed to get. Not sure what happened in your case, Tony.
I was going to say what happened is that I feel it worked its magic on me. I feel healthier. For the first time in my life, I feel validated and healthy thanks to my friend, Dee Wallace. Wow, that made me feel great. I feel like she may have been kind of talking specifically to me because I'm known to like horror movies and horror. And so I felt like maybe she was really talking to me, you know, about that.
I am working on an edit where I replace Heather with your voice.
Don't be.
So I'll send that to you.
Don't be crazy. I don't need that.
Here's Dee Wallace. Now, this is a Heather and Maddie scoop. By the way, you can hear Heather and Maddie on Light 105 FM in Providence. But you can be anywhere in the world and hear us. You just look up the Light 105 app, and you can listen to us from around the world. This is a scoop that we got. I asked her here about, she gives so much of herself. I'm going like, man, how do you still do that? You know, and here's what she said about energy.
You put out and expend so much incredible energy. And how do you save a space for yourself to be the healer and the mom and everything that you are in your personal life?
I've always been blessed with an abundance of energy, but I really had to learn, especially early in my career, how to control that and how to manage it, how to let it out in front of the camera and then let it go after cut.
Mm.
And it took me really through Cujo to learn how to do that.
Mm.
Cujo, I blew out all my adrenals. They treated me for exhaustion for 3 weeks after that
film.
Oh,
my God.
My goodness.
When they say cut, I just direct my body and my brain, okay, I was just acting. This isn't real. I'm not really in fight or flight. I'm more conscious, I guess, is the easiest way to say it.
She actually injured herself making Cujo screaming so much and being hysterical. I mean, that was an incredible fact, I thought. In fact, when you listen to the raw interview, Heather and I kind of laugh. We didn't think she blew up my adrenals. We're like, yeah. And she's like, no, I had to be treated. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it can happen. It really can. You know, I mean, look, it should be said that I've heard people, you know, kind of make fun of that kind of confession by an actor, or say like, you know, why don't you try acting, or, you know, the method, like they think it's method or something
Right.
But it's based on a misconception, really, because, you know, when you're acting in intense scenes like that, and God knows she's had her share, and in Cujo particularly, I can see like that 90% of that movie is her in an absolutely completely freaked out zone.
Just locked in a car close to the camera. Like,
oh. And you know, when you're acting and you're good at it, the situation isn't real. And you know that, but the emotions are kind of real. Like, in order to do it well, you have to be having the actual emotions. You're not faking that part of it. Right.
Right.
And that's not even a method thing. It's just like you can't help but really draw on that. So she's right. In a small way, I've experienced that. You know, I haven't had parts like that, but even in little scenes where I've done, it's like it really does exhaust you at a place. If you're doing stuff that's intense, it's really hard to drop it. And I'm glad she can do that, because I've not learned how to.
I can completely identify with that, because after I did your film Sender, for weeks afterwards, I just kept punching people in the nuts.
That's what I heard. That's what I read about. That's why we didn't talk for a while, to be totally honest.
I mean,
I kind of ducked out. And I was like, oh, boy. Matt, he's going through phase.
I'm hoping by the end of this episode, I blow your adrenals out.
Now I'm getting upset. Now I'm actually upset.
So as you heard, I was a professional broadcaster there asking her professional questions. And like I'm being tonight, a good podcaster, because it's the first episode in season 7. And like I will tonight, I went on to then ruin all that professionalism and blow it when Heather asked her about E.T.
What do you have, if anything, at your house from that movie set?
Well, up until about 3 years ago, I had my cat costume and my cat ears and maybe one of the necklaces. I don't know. And a lot of memories.
Dee, I say this respectfully. I, on behalf of teenage boys everywhere, which I was when E.T. came out, thank you for the cat costume.
Oh, my God. I cannot tell you how much I have heard that. Oh, Miss Wallace, I had such a crush on you and I was great. Who knew? Who knew?
So D. Wallace's people have reached out to me. And
oh, man.
500 yards away from
restraining order. God, how does that feel? Jeez. Amazing question. Thank you for having the courage to do that.
It had to be said, didn't it, Tony?
It had to be said. It had to be said. She's iconic in a way that she probably doesn't understand.
Exactly. So I dedicate that to you. I thank Heather Gersten, my radio partner, and what a great experience to be able to interview someone who's brought us both great entertainment, pathos, and enjoyment. So thank you to Dee Wallace.
Thank you. Yeah, she's just a great actor. I'm someone who I've always just liked watching. Whatever the genre is, she's great. She brings it. Huge fan. And I'm jealous as hell. That's great.
You know, she's got it. Whatever it is, the second she's on screen, you just want to watch it. She's great.
She's just emotionally invested. She's one of those people that can't not really be emotionally invested in what she's doing.
Did you hear how hard she laughed when I said that?
I can't understand what you just said. Why did you start mumbling that? That didn't sound appropriate. What did you say?
Never mind. Something about your adrenals.
Just bring it back. Just steer this back into a zone that's palatable.
Nope.
Here you go, Gordy. Happy birthday.
Tony, when tragedy strikes the patriarch of a remote horse ranch, siblings OJ and Emerald attempt to capture video evidence of a UAP that is raining not just objects but terror down upon them from above. Jordan Peele's latest film stars Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, and is right in our wheelhouse logline-wise. But is this film, if I may use parlance, channeling my inner Emerald, dope? Or is the title a little too on the nose? Nope.
I could just turn right around and go, yeah, what do you think, Maddie?
You know, I'm so torn on this because, okay, the best way I can say it is this, and this is going to sound completely contradictory and, I don't know, diametrically opposed to itself, but it might be the least scared I've been in a Jordan Peele film. It's the least emotionally invested I've been in the protagonist, maybe, in a Jordan Peele film. It's the least I've laughed in a Jordan Peele film. It's perhaps the most ill-paced Jordan Peele film, but, or rather, and, it might be my favorite one. And I don't know how that can be. I think it's a lot of things. I think it's maybe his most honest to him. It's his most serving of what he wanted to say and less concerned with selling a movie. It was like his kind of long form meditation on a theme, which I'll get to what I think the movie's about. The way it treats the paranormal and where it goes with the potential UFO topic, I think is a freaking home run and kind of daring. So I'm mixed on it, but I think I love it. I can't stop thinking about it.
Interesting. I could stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
I didn't think you would like this movie, and I didn't read any reviews.
You didn't?
Yeah. I thought you would like the UAP UFO part, maybe, but
yeah. Look, I'm gonna come at this with complete respect. Absolute mad respect for the dude. Anything I say should be taken with the sense that the obvious sense that I'm jealous as hell and want his career. That should obviously be what everybody's takeaway is. And this is coming from somebody who, you know, I think Get Out is pretty great. I'm on board with that movie. I think it's crucial to the genre and smart and was actually daring, which is something I don't get from other Peele movies, really, is the daring quality of it. Just the, you know, it changed, like, even in how it changed tones and shifted tones and used other movies, it was really, it kept surprising me. It kept punching, and it got better the second time I saw it. So I know that, you know, the dude knows what he's doing. He's really smart. He knows that he's saying something, which I appreciate.
Yes.
And so everything I say is, you know, I gotta, I, you know, I, you got to take with that. You know, like that's really how I feel about him. Even though I wasn't crazy about Us, I still liked a lot of the mood of that movie. And I felt that I was in it with those people and those characters. And I, you know, I felt their reality. And
I loved that movie.
And so I went to this one with extremely high hopes. And I also made the mistake of seeing it very, very late. And I didn't know anything. I really consciously really kept myself away from seeing even a full trailer. Like I just didn't want to know.
Sure. Yep. Agreed.
And then for whatever reason, I couldn't get to it for a really long time. So I saw it late in the run and so my expectations had grown and grown and grown. And I guess the thing I'll preface, you know, I should shut up, but the thing I'll preface is that I think he made a movie that's supposed to be better on the second watch. And for me, I'm hoping that the second watch proves to be a great experience for me and that I can kind of forget the first one, but I don't think I can because I didn't walk away feeling anything.
Hmm.
And that's not entirely my fault because you're going to say I'm dead inside, but it's not my fault completely.
Neither of us are under any signed contract to like a movie that the other one likes, the other doesn't.
No, I don't care about you, dude. Honestly, I care about like a movie that is pretty divisive and I don't want to, you know, turn listeners off by being flippant about a movie that a lot of people care about and a director that a lot of people care about. That's where I'm coming from. I'd love to piss you off.
Mission accomplished. 10 or 15 minutes in, I was very worried and very upset. And for example, when they bring up the whole UFO thing, and let me say this too, real quick, there's going to be no spoilers in this section. Anything we talk about here is going to be basic plot that you'll see in trailers and in clips.
Yeah. In this episode later, we are going to towards spoil the stuff, end, but we'll tell
right,
you.
Towards the end, we're going to spoil the hell out of it and talk directly about how it ends. So we'll give you fair warning if you haven't seen it. There's a scene where one of the characters, Angel, kind of sets up the quote unquote UFO threat that they're dealing with. And he gives some kind of expository dialogue. You know, there are these things in the sky and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, this was set up better in a movie like Signs, where we got the threat explained to us via a children's book, his child researching it. And I remember watching that at the time going like, oh, what a great way to give us the information we need. And in this one, it's just like a kid saying it. His dialogue's kind of coarse. And I'm like, oh man, if Signs did a better job than this of setting it up. And then I kind of had a little talk with myself and said, watch the movie that's being presented to you, first of all, and stop comparing it to Signs or whatever. Secondly, it's Jordan Peele. Trust him a little bit and see where it goes. And it certainly does not go where that character thinks it's going, where anyone thinks it's going. And I started to understand then why the slow burn, why the muted performances, why the kind of meditative first two acts, why the, I think, even underdevelopment of the characters in a way. And so all started to feel right for me about halfway through. And then by the end, I was all in. When the threat that we are dealing with is revealed, I was breathless. I just thought it was phenomenal. That aspect of it, it all paid off for me.
Look, I wish that it did for me in my first experience with it, you know, like, the best way I can put it is this. And granted, I'm an older person now. So when I go to movies, I'm going to get something else, but not really. Not when a movie I really like hits me the right way, or when I know a movie that really worked on me. For instance, and I made this little list, like when I saw Close Encounters for the first time, I like left the theater and then I wanted to research UFOs desperately. Like I just wanted to be a ufologist. And then when I saw, for instance, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, I had a great time in the movie. It was exciting. It was like, yeah, it's a fun movie references and whatever. But I wanted to be an archaeologist. Like I left going, I want to learn about archaeology. And when I saw Jaws, I actually wanted to like get into marine biology and learn about sharks and learn about the ocean. And even when I watched like a movie like Twister, which is a stupid movie, I would love to go on chase a hurricane storms. Like what thing? A tornado watch would be amazing and chase storms. And when I left this movie, all I wanted to do was like look up Wikipedia and see what Jordan Peele was on about, and then watch The X-Files, because I really feel that why this movie is a second watch movie for me is because I think what my takeaway was that the movie's about how smart Jordan Peele is and how many movies he's seen, but I don't know what this movie is.
Huh.
And so I think maybe I would have felt it would have been more innovative and powerful if he had gone back to his like true comedy roots and made a more subversive kind of approach to the film. Even though there's some subversive things, I guess, about it. But I ended up just feeling that this was, for me, an emotionally disconnected bunch of really fascinating ideas and approaches to the genre. But they didn't end up coming together for me as an experience that I just felt like I wanted to live in that world. I just left kind of going, oh, that's really weird, smart, not what I thought. I didn't want to be any of these people. I don't know if I'm supposed to want to or not. I know this is kind of a critique about us and also, you know, kind of not. So I don't know when those things were being played or how balanced that was for me.
But I guess one of the critiques I've seen about it is in a lot of the reviews, now that I watched it twice, I'm allowing myself to read reviews. And I even listened to our beloved Film Spotting talk about it today. And one of the things I say, it's kind of like about a bunch of different things, too many things. It's one of those movies. And I can see why people think that. But for me, it's very much about one thing, some form of greed, self-serving yourself at the cost of anything else, to the point where you will look away from the horrors and the things that happen to people and including defenseless people like animals to serve yourself, to get what you want. And so in that, and I might be giving Jordan Peele way too much credit, but I think that is why we have some underdevelopment of characters. I think that is why our lead OJ is so muted in his performance as opposed to other things he's done for Jordan Peele. I think it's supposed to be a meditation in a sense, guised as a sci-fi action movie about what we will do to achieve our quote unquote dreams, who we will hurt. And you know, the movie starts with a biblical quote, and he's done that in his other films too. So, you know, it's an Old Testament quote, which on the surface,
it's also an old trick. So in movies, so
yeah, no,
he didn't invent that.
Oh no, God, no. I mean, every book I've read starts with some sort of quote, but it's an Old Testament quote, kind of a lament and a comfort to the Israeli people from God, basically, our prophet saying, I'm going to take care of your enemies. Don't worry. On one hand, it's kind of a direct reflection of what happens in the movie. There's literally a monkey and you talk about throwing filth, things like that. And then this kind of does that from up above in the sky. Another way to look at it is, you know, if you look at the Old Testament as a precursor, teasing, if you will, the New Testament, then what happens in the New Testament? We have a sacrifice. We have someone who breaks all those old rules, comes along, lays down his life, and everything's new again. And what happens at the end of this movie? There's an act of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And again, been done, certainly, of course. But in that moment, it all kind of made a lot more sense to me. And in a second viewing, I saw a lot more subtlety between those characters, between OJ and his sister, that I really enjoyed. I laughed more than I did on the first one. I said, okay.
Yeah, see, I didn't laugh. I laughed a couple times when people said nope, but that was the only laugh.
Well, no, there was one scene that made me laugh out loud and kind of pump my fist, which I'll get to. We'll talk about favorite scenes and least favorite scenes. But yeah, and remember how I prefaced this. It might be the least invested in characters I've been. And it is definitely the least I laughed. Get Out, I was laughing continuously. Us has great moments of humor between, you know, that husband character in particular. This one, I wasn't laughing throughout, but I do think that was intentional. Now, you may choose
to not like that. I get that. I think this movie's like a prayer. I think it's like a 2-hour prayer. It's also the longest of his movies, I think. And it did kind of feel the longest.
It feels like it's the longest.
And I kind of agree with that, but man, I don't know. I just can't stop thinking about it.
I couldn't stop thinking about it in the way that I can't stop thinking about it, like a thing where like I have to figure out why I didn't respond. And so I saw it and I was disappointed that I didn't have any feeling about it. I mean, I was pretty numb through the movie and though impressed, I will admit, like, there are great sequences in it. There are great ideas in it. There are really fun, subversive ways of telling stories. There is really kind of cool, unselfconscious force of representation in this movie with, you know, like non-white actors who are, you don't even stop for a second to think about like where are white folk. It's just like, it's right on in so many ways. And then I just left not having an experience. And I think I know for me what it was. And again, I actually would consider reviewing this again, like next in a year from now on our show. And like, maybe I'll completely flipped on it because I'll see that the point of the movie is something else, but I can't not have this first experience. I felt a little shortchanged on the paranormal tip, on the UFO tip, on the supernatural element of this movie. I felt that in this case, it was something that was being used to tell other things that Jordan Peele wanted to talk about, but his interest really wasn't in the supernatural or paranormal aspects. And that is always my main drive. So if there's something going on like that in a movie, there is simply no other more important thing than that thing, how people respond to it, and not in terms of making interesting thematic connections to cinema or making the main point, like the fact that it's this meta examination of the UFO movie, of the new age, which I think it self-consciously is really trying to be. And in some cases it achieves great sequences and awesome spectacles. And then left me feeling that much like, you know, was that on purpose? I don't know. Maybe Jordan Peele's whole thing is, I really couldn't care less about UFOs or aliens or things like that are in the sky, because we got problems down here and people need money. And that's really what the focus is. My takeaway from this movie emotionally was, I guess people really like, you know, they'll do anything for a buck, but how they arrived at this didn't seem logical a lot of the time. And also in supernatural paranormal movies that deal with this kind of thing, I feel if you sacrifice specific kind of like accurate documentarian kind of like truthfulness in how you're trying to do it, and you get too out there with representations, it starts becoming less about, like, this cowboy character to me was a character out of one of his sketches.
Which?
Jupe, Steven Yeun.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yes. Right? The young actor.
I know they're all cowboys, but I mean the guy who's dressed as a cowboy from the actor.
Yes. Yes. He's a former child actor who runs a ranch near the horse ranch. It's like an amusement park, basically. And he suffered a childhood trauma. It sounds confusing. It is. It's not confusing, but it's just complicated.
Without spoilers, it's hard to talk about.
There was a trauma that happened on a set when he was a child actor. And he has grown to run this kind of amusement center that is located somewhat near this horse ranch. And so go ahead. I'm sorry. The character seemed to you to be like from one of his sketches.
Yeah. And in a way I'm kind of cool with that. Like, oh wow, this feels like a surreal sketch in the middle of this movie. Right. Which I can appreciate, but it really did ruin the suspension of disbelief over this supernatural event that was happening for me. The movie started becoming about the movie. It started becoming about itself. It became very, very self-referential. It became very, very meta. And it became very, very much about it, about wormholes and little carvings within itself. Interesting. Outside of that, I didn't feel anything. I didn't want to go look in the sky. I didn't want to see one of the things that he's presenting here. I really didn't feel it was a real world I could crawl into. I felt it was smart and tight and interesting and more about cinema probably than anything else, which is certainly not what I was expecting. And maybe that's why I didn't have a good experience with it at first. I'm totally willing to accept that.
I hope I'm right. I could be wrong. I don't think he was making a movie about even Hollywood or movies, although the imagery and the metaphors are constant. I get it. The thing itself looks like a camera aperture. I mean, I get no, it. But yeah, I think he uses that. I think he uses that to make the kind of simple point that I was talking about before. And where he goes with the UFO phenomena, quote unquote, so funny you said that. I took it as he probably, meaning Jordan Peele, has looked into the UFO thing, has researched it, okay, and has discovered one of the theories about the phenomenon and wanted to present something different.
Right. And in the first movie about it that we get, there is simply no interest in it. So I bring to you that there is zero interest about anything except making money off of taking a picture of it, which to me is not a logical thing to do. So it's already kind of like a sketch comedy logic within a movie where I'm now kind of thinking, oh, I'm really in the wrong movie theater.
Well, it is logical for characters who are driven by this self-serving greed. A society, if you will, that is driven by self-serving greed to the point where they will look away from whatever it is. There's a great scene at the dinner. Well, I don't know how great it is, but there's a scene at the dinner, which I think backs up my point a little bit, where Angel, one of the characters, when they're talking about taking a picture of this thing, he's literally looking at them going, and he's kind of like your voice, I think, in that moment. He's like your voice. He goes, but like, I get it. We're going to make money and take pictures of this thing, but we're going to save people, right? We're going to do good for people, right? And Emerald's kind of like,
that's a very kind of biblical interpretation of this. We're going to do right by people. This thing was here maybe before this, they were.
So I'm not arguing like the validity of what he's saying. I'm saying the no interest in the phenomenon. I'm saying that was his point. Like, I think he has great interest in it. I think he's saying even something like this coming from the sky, they were still interested in making a buck, these characters. And this guy's saying, I understand we make a buck, but we can still help people, right, guys? And these characters who are devoid at that point of this altruism, they're all about self-service to the point where, again, they'll look away. They're going like, yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, we'll help people.
I gotta only suggest that I see what your point you're making, but it's too muddy to concept because they actually succeed. You know, okay, let's get into spoilers because have to say this, because the movie has a freaking happy ending where we get cowboys and proud, like we've succeeded and defeated. That is different than the concept I have about, that's a philosophical difference about how to treat this material. That becomes a fundamental philosophical thing. I don't feel this movie has any awe in it at all. Maybe you're right. Maybe that is that I missed the point. And that is, you know, this is a critique on all of these characters' pursuit of this thing. I don't even think there's a case for that. That's really well played out. And you yourself said these characters aren't really that three-dimensional here.
Partly because I think, and he might have been overthinking himself, is that he wanted to present rather two-dimensional characters who, like, at first, again, they do, there is a change that happens, but like, you know, Emerald is completely driven by her own selfish desires.
And I feel that is potentially, I'm not saying it's here, but it's potentially an excuse for underwriting.
I could be giving him too much credit. You could be right. And I hope that's not the case, but you could be right. There's a scene where the character who's a cameraman, who's going to shoot this, kind of lays it out, maybe a little too on the nose. As a matter of fact, he says, this dream you have of basically being a star is a nightmare you never wake up from, or a dream you never wake up from. And I think that is really a huge theme here. And I think it's just, he happens to use Hollywood and acting as the playground to make that point, but it could have been anything. It could have been making widgets. We all want to be, or many of us want to be a star, as it were. And we'll do a lot of other things.
Question for you. Okay, so this movie could arguably call the Jaws could be considered one of the closest things to this movie.
Okay.
In many respects. I mean, can we agree on that? You don't think so?
I wouldn't put it in Jaws category. I liked it, but I wouldn't.
No, in terms of what kind of movie, blockbuster.
There's a threat.
What genre of thing?
Sure. It's a big.
And you know, what I'm gonna say about it is that I got all of those things from Jaws. I got societary, you know, I got comments on society. I got an understanding of that community. I got the politics of that place. I understood how the real world was working in there. I saw greed and I saw, you know, selflessness, and I saw a lot of themes, but I never once was out of the experience going, oh, I wonder what this means. It's a simple enough story. And I think it's made more complicated than it needs to be in service of the spectacle of Jordan Peele's cinematic magic. And I am not overwhelmed by that alone enough to feel like it was a movie I would happily go back to. It's one I'm more curious to go back to just to see if I missed like so much of it that I just didn't get it at all, which is completely possible.
I will acquiesce to the point that he might be at times in this movie self-congratulatory, a little, this is my thing, this is the Jordan Peele style. But I think for me, those moments were kind of not distracting enough to take me out of what was going to happen with the scene, where it was going to go. So let me play a clip here. After this clip, we're going full spoiler so we can talk about the scene without hemming and hawing so much.
There's something out here in Agua Dulce, and you're probably the only person in the world that could get it on film. That's it.
Horse girl, this dream you're chasing, the one where you end up at the top of the mountain, all eyes on you. It's the dream you never wake up from.
Warning, you're about to enter the spoiler zone.
I want to play one clip for you, Tony, from a guy named Jeff Woolwine. He has incredible video of what I would describe as they look like sky jellyfish that seem to be sometimes bioluminescent. They look like clouds at times. They come in and out of clouds. They come from behind mountains, and they kind of look like organic living things. First, I'll just play the clip. This is the first time I had ever heard or talked to a researcher who seriously believed this and had some video evidence of this being a possible explanation for the UFO UAP phenomenon.
There are crafts out there, sure, why not? But what I think the majority of what the people are seeing is another living entity. I was the first one to bring this to the attention of the ufologists, to the History Channel, to Ancient Aliens. It's not a cloaked ship. It's a living entity. Each life is a specific entity being. Okay, and they're in formation. They're seeing living creatures, flying spiders, flying crosses, flying orbs, flying lights, okay? It's weird stuff. It's another living organism, if you will. The oceanographers are finding new species of life below the ocean. This is a new species of life above the ocean.
So I thought to myself, as I was watching this movie, is this where Jordan Peele is going with this? And then there's a line towards the middle of the second act, I guess, where he goes, what if it's not a ship? It doesn't move like a ship. And I'm like, oh, yes. And maybe it's because I knew I'd talked to that guy and was thinking that way. But I was so excited that Jordan Peele went that way with it. Because in a way, Tony, I was like, where can he go with this to make it kind of new and different? It's a tough subject to make a movie about and make it exciting and have it pay off. But the fact that he went with it being an unexplained bioorganism, something in the sky that's living and eating things, I thought was freaking awesome. And then when it manifests into its full kind of angelic jellyfish, fleshy monster that was kind of gross and kind of beautiful at the same time, I was blown away. I thought it was one of the best images on film I've ever seen when it expands like that. I just was, I don't know, man, it worked on me. I just blew out your
you did.
Adrenals.
You just did it to me. I'm really, I really don't know where to go. I got nowhere to go, man. You got me in a corner because I have no feeling here at all. Like I said, I'm impressed by some things. I don't feel anything. I was not. You know, like you, I liked the directions it went there. I thought that was a cool way to go. More conceptually than actually for me in the theater. But look, I think this really does boil down to the fact that I think what ruins, you know, paranormal themed movies for me, too many other things going on. I guess maybe that's what it is. My focus just really wants to be on the crisis and the problem. I also felt that, you know, though I agree that yes, these characters were driven by greed and stuff, I didn't feel there was really enough really believable specific behavior that I could get out of this. I didn't feel, for instance, that this was a working ranch. I didn't really believe that that house lived in that valley. I didn't really believe that kind of light exists at night out there. I didn't really believe that they were that close to a studio to shoot, and if so, I wanted to know how far. I didn't really believe they were that remote that other people wouldn't have seen this thing flying around, or there wouldn't have been word of it elsewhere. I didn't really believe that people were that stupid about capturing things on camera that work in show business. So I think there was a lot of detuned things that were written to maybe be palatable for a bigger audience that maybe made me feel a bit suspicious of it. I don't think it was a really accurate to me depiction of the people that I've seen working in these fields in show business. I don't understand calling that DP. I don't understand that move. I don't understand the DP's willingness to go there without some kind of a coffee in Beverly Hills. I don't understand anybody not going, what's the plan? There's no Dubois at all. And that's my problem with it. And this is where we're very different. You delighted in a movie that gave us zero Dubois. And I'm sitting here going, to me, a lot of the point of all of this, if we're going to do any kind of serious minded exploration of these events, is what it does to people's minds who come in contact with this. And I felt maybe it was just a manipulation of the situation to say that people would respond by just wanting to make money, which is actually not the big response that people get from witnessing these supernatural events. They usually want psychological help. They usually think that they're going mad. They usually think they need to, you know, they're not going to call the cops, and I get why they don't do that. But because there was no spiritual quality to this experience that they were having, I was left really going, I'd rather see him do this as a full-on satire than try to make me fall for it in every single category. Biggest, eye candy beyond belief, biggest summer blockbuster for me, like the biggest movie experience with the most meaning and the most themes and the most cinema reference. I think his greed for me got in the way of it. And I wanted him to just tell the story. And I didn't think there was enough of one.
I think he subverted that whole thing. I think he made it look and seem like it was going to be that big, crazy. It's kind of a, like I said, a meditation.
He's on record for saying he wanted to make a spectacle. That he wanted, before he wanted to do anything else, he said he wanted to make a giant spectacle that would blow everybody's mind.
Oh, I didn't know that. That hurts my argument.
Yeah. It does.
That hurts my argument.
It completely crushes it.
How about this? This could crush everything we just talked about, in that you could make an argument that it's really not even a paranormal movie, because it's a biological movie. It's a science movie. In a way, it's an entity. It's a living thing that we just haven't identified yet. It'd be like making a movie about a jellyfish we find in the ocean that hasn't been identified yet. We think is a ghost.
So go watch a nature documentary then.
Well, speaks back to the motivation of the character you said earlier. There's hints, by the way, this is just a nitpicky thing to address one of the things you brought up. I would take too long to address everything you brought up, but there is some motivation for that cameraman to be called by her. And they hint at it, but be that
nobody in show business makes that stupid a phone call. She's been around this stuff She's been around it.
Even that's addressed.
Not believable.
He says to her, "Where'd you get that number?" She goes, "The call sheet." And he goes, "Ugh, like who does that?" He basically says, "Who does that to her?"
I got you.
But yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So this is good. Right out of the gate, we had a big split. I love it. I wouldn't want people to tune into this show for the first time and think we sit there and pat each other on the back for an hour.
I wanted to have a fresh conversation with you, but now this is like ancient already. I've been stewing over it for weeks. You've been in love with it for weeks.
I just figured out why you're so mad. I just figured out. We were supposed to go see this together, and I was gone shooting. And
oh, jeez.
Like, okay.
Oh, my God. Listen,
Tony, I'm very popular. And I still love you. Just because I didn't split a popcorn with you and pour my Reese's Pieces into the popcorn, you don't have to be bad.
I don't know what to say.
You know what's weird is you open this episode going, "Who gets more angry at each other, my brother?"
No, This is it. We're angry now. We're upset now. You're comfortable with a movie in which the monster is a giant sombrero. Let's say that. I'm not.
Okay. To me, it looked more like a sand dollar or a jellyfish. Like a sand dollar
too. I know. I'm just being stupid.
And then when it expands, you didn't go like, "What the f-?" No. Okay.
Oh. No, I didn't.
But he kept it grounded in like a fleshy biological possibility.
It wasn't because it was painted with digital pixel brushes. No.
All right. How about this? We didn't do this. Let's do a favorite moment and then a least favorite moment. How about that? That'll cleanse our palate and we get to our top three list.
Okay.
Which is, by the way, tonight, inspired by the film, is top three helmets in film history, because there is a character in this movie who shows up wearing maybe the coolest helmet or weirdest helmet ever in a movie. It's a silver helmet with one eye hole, which is awesome. So we're going to do top three helmets, but let's do a favorite moment and a least favorite moment. How about that?
Okay.
I think my least favorite moment, there's some dialogue with the character Angel that I just felt was not the normal Jordan Peele kiss, you know, of humor and dialogue. And it just seemed to me a little clunky. And every time he was on screen, although his character served a purpose, wasn't the best for me. My favorite moment. A cameraman says, "I'm going to bring a camera here that doesn't need electricity," and she does this.
"Made her myself. No electricity.
Didn't I tell you this mother was going to come up here with a non-electrical camera? Let's go, boy!
Yeah!" So I just adored that scene. I laughed out loud, and I was like, that's Jordan Peele, you know, from the other films. I wanted just maybe more of that. That would be a critique of this movie, that there wasn't enough of that moment right there.
Right. Okay. Well, I think my favorite sequence in the movie is the
closing credits.
Yeah. No, look, like I'm coming off like so mean. I don't mean to. It's just that you're so positive. I don't know whether you're just happy to be home or what it is. I
like the movie.
Okay. There are plenty of really cool things that happen in this movie. Really well done things. I mean, look, shout out to the DP, Hoyte van Hoytema, who's one of the great living directors of photography. Mm. Let the Right One In, her Interstellar, like Dunkirk, Tenet is incredible.
My God.
They did some beautiful stuff in 70 mil with this. Like, the movie looks great. And there's wonderful actors in it. I like Daniel Kaluuya and everything I've seen him in. I think Kiki Palmer's, you know, really a great actor. I don't love how she was pushed and directed to be on as much as she was. That's a directorial thing. Always like Michael Wincott. You know, I mean, Steven Yeun's great. I like the cast. But for me, the sequence that worked the most, that had me most engaged, was a scene where he thinks that he's in the barn at night and thinks he's seeing grays. That he thinks he's seeing gray aliens.
Yeah.
And it's actually a prank being pulled on him.
Yes.
But that's a terrifying sequence, very much kind of like the scene in Zodiac where he goes into the basement with that guy and he says he has all the film canisters. Mm-hmm. It's a fake out in the same kind of way because it's not really what he thinks it is, but it's pretty terrifying. So I love that scene. And there's other things I'll say I liked about it because I've been kind of negative. Like, I love the scene where we stay with Kaluuya in the car during the rainstorm where he goes, "Nope, not happening."
I mean, he locks the door as if that's going to do it.
It's great. It's full of wonderful moments like that. And I appreciate those. I think those two are probably my favorites. My least favorite, I think, is going to be as much as I like Michael Wincott, it's going to be him watching rhinos eating things in his living room while he's fetishizing his movie camera. I felt that was a step too far. That was the kind of move that made me go, yes, you're very smart and I get your references, but I just don't believe this is happening. And that's the kind of not believing that didn't help me with my with suspending my disbelief where I really needed it.
We didn't mention Keith David, did we?
Who's incredible. I wish he'd been in more of it. You know, I mean, his character doesn't make it through much. You know, great. The way he dies is amazing. That's really cool.
Did I ever tell you about the time I bumped into him at a bar in Boston with my friend Marty?
No.
Oh, it was the greatest thing. He was doing a play in Boston at, I think, like the Huntington Theater. And we were at like an Uno's or something. We lived on Beacon Street at the time. My best friend and I in Boston. I was in my 20s. And my buddy Marty's like, I think that's him. I'm like, no way. So I walked up to him and I was like, hey, big fan. He's like, well, thank you, boys. Sit down. And he had a drink with us. He wouldn't, like, we thought we were bothering him. He wouldn't shut up. It was, like, in the best way. He's like, well, I studied at Juilliard and da-da-da-da-da. And he's telling all these great stories. Like, I'm doing a play across the street. Now, where do you boys live? We're like, oh, right down there. He's like, oh, wonderful. What a great time. You're living in the city. And get a drink with him. It was just the best night ever. So I love it.
Nice. Nice. I'm sure he's awesome. He's got a name. Like, he calls himself the Golden Throat or something. He's got an amazing voice, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I think we should probably move on. Tony, we did a bad job of kind of covering our opinion, I think, here. But at the end of the day, rated P for paranormal, meaning you like it, it's going on the shelf, or P for pass, no thank you to nope.
Okay, well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say no, it's a P for pass for me right now, but I want it understood and on the record that I really do want to have another conversation, or at least a micro part of an episode after I've seen it again and cleared my head.
Done deal. I'm
fully accepting that I may have a different vibe on this movie viewing two.
I'm going to give it a rated P for paranormal and for positivity because I'm just so happy.
You are, which is disturbing. It's increasing happiness, which I don't like.
All right, let's do our top three list. This is the top three helmets in film history. Again, inspired by a scene in Nope, the silver helmet with one eye. And by the way, we always kind of memorialize the helmet award. And if I will cut this out, if it steps on your number one, cause I gather it might be your number one, but I was thinking we should just call it the Peter Fonda Memorial Helmet for the GOAT helmet of all time. Right.
Okay.
The
red, white,
right.
That doesn't step on me, but it's great.
Okay, great. All right. So it's the Peter Fonda Memorial Helmet, the red, white, blue helmet, probably the greatest helmet in film history. Tony, would you like to start?
I would. My number three choice would be, Joker's helmet in Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, it was on my list.
Oh, really? Okay.
All right. Born to Kill with the peace sign, right?
Yeah, that's to me got to be on the list.
Fantastic. Matthew Modine just came up in your Arkin Brothers film podcast because he played the boatsman.
He did. 47 Meters Down. That's correct. Yeah, that is correct. Down. Yeah.
So my number three from Spaceballs, Rick Moranis's oversized.
I love that you always include. It's one comedy. From the comedy vaults of the 80s.
I have to. It's in my blood.
Amazing. My number two is going to be, I'm going to give a little shout out to my pop's movie, The Rocketeer.
I was on my honorable mentions.
A very, in my opinion, an underseen and wonderful, wonderful comic book movie. Like a
agreed.
Really, really good one that more people should check out. So I think the effects still hold up. I think the costume design's great. The 30s styling is cool. And the helmet is just so retro awesome. So
it's got that kind of like steampunk full face with the round eye. Yep. It's great. I went back and revisited that movie. I had never seen it actually, because you had mentioned on this very podcast, you picked it as a deep pull favorite of yours in one of our lists. So I went back and watched it and man, totally agree.
Right? It holds up. It's so fun. Oh,
it's great. It's great. Number two is from one of your favorite directors, Quentin Tarantino, Kill Bill 1, Uma Thurman's yellow striped helmet that matches her yellow striped kind of Bruce Lee-ish leather outfit. I mean, come on.
Badass. Come on. One of the greats.
That's almost as good as D. Wallace's kitty cat outfit.
Yeah, pretty much. They could swap those.
I almost said D. Snyder, by the way.
His kitty cat outfit is awesome, though.
Woo!
Yes. Ow. He's like 6 foot seven, that guy.
I think he is.
He is. Okay. So my number one, I'm at number one. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It is the face mask helmet worn by the Phantom in Phantom of the Paradise.
Huh.
From the '70s. Okay. A great, amazing, crazy WTF movie. You've not seen it?
Nope.
Oh.
I'm Googling it now. You discuss while I Google. Well, as every great podcast does.
You know, it's Brian De Palma, early De Palma, and it's kind of unlike most anything else he did. There's a lot of music in it. It's kind of like a rock opera horror movie, where it's kind of a rock sci-fi version of Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, and I see him. Yes, I've seen that image before. Okay, yeah.
That is my favorite. Cool, it's great. It's my favorite. It's my favorite.
Well, Tony, I'm going to have to dip into the comedy genre once again for my number one, The Black Knight's Helmet and Monty Python.
Oh, that was almost on my list. It almost made it.
And you know what's funny? You watch that scene. I remember being scared of it as a kid, laughing at the appropriate part when he gets all his limbs cut off. But like the knight itself, when you first introduced him, that helmet
pretty menacing.
Is so frightening. Like I would like to, if I ever made a horror movie, I would put something just like that on an actor.
Well,
and have him just stand in the woods.
You have the size to pull that off in a movie. You should wear that.
God, I would love to play that a part like that. Oh my God. So yeah, that was my number one. Just that when I think helmets, I just immediately thought of that scene.
Brilliant.
And, funny and scary. So Tony, this has been, I'm glad we did battle over this movie. I think
I'm
we
sorry.
Needed a good battle.
I didn't like it enough. I'm sorry. I am sorry.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize to my soon-to-be second wife, Dee Wallace.
Did she like this movie? Did she like Nope?
No, but she doesn't like when I'm upset, and you've made me upset.
I love you already.
Because we're so close.
Oh, she likes it when you're upset. No, she likes it when you're upset. No, she does, trust me.
I love you already.
Okay, Tony, next week, we'll be back. Second episode of the new season. We're going to be covering a movie called The Wretched. What a great title. I have no idea about this movie. I don't know if it's good, bad, or indifferent, but I can't wait to watch it and review it with you and our friends. And then the week after that, we're going to have our long-awaited Skinwalker Ranch special. We'll be talking to one of my close personal friends, Jason. He's one of the team that makes the show Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. He lives in Utah during the filming of that show. He's on the ranch every day. He has experienced these things. He has an insider knowledge of Skinwalker Ranch like nobody we could talk to besides the people who own it, basically.
Dude, I don't want no hitchhiker stuff, man. We got to keep this saged. We got to keep this well saged.
I'm going to say to the spirits, we're just asking questions. That's all we're doing. Good to be back, buddy.
Yeah, it is.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're @ratedparanormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram @kidriga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
I felt so dirty. All I even needed is
something like this. Let's see. Anything that I liked? No, I haven't seen anything that was any good at all.
Love you already.